Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCI call on the 15th of May, 2012. On the call today, we have Michael Graham, Steve Del Bianco, Rosemary Sinclair, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, and Cheryl Langdon-Hall. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julia Headland will be joining us a little later, and myself, Natalie Peregrin. And we have two apologies from Carlos Aguirre and Tobias Marlin. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. And Jonathan Zook has just joined the audio bridge. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thanks, Natalie. And hello, everybody. I'm sorry I missed the last call, but life just took me in another direction, but good to be back this time. So if we just quickly review the open items, open action items. The first one is a bit of an umbrella one, I think, isn't it? So we'll probably leave that in carryover mode. Is that what you were thinking, Barry?
Actually, I think it was just a general call out to all hands for the working group to reach out to their government contacts, and some of the more the next action items get more specific, so we can probably go ahead and close this one out.
Yes, okay, that's good. All right, thank you for that. So if we move to the second one, Steve, would you mind giving us an update on that?
Sure, the second and third one really go together, because I reached out to board member Bruce Tonkin and asked him whether he would find a way for the board to specifically prompt the GAC to respond to the advice, since we understand that they had never made a formal request for advice.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce agreed to do that, wrote back for some more details, and I provided those to him. And then Bruce replied with an email that I circulated to everyone on list today. And Bruce came up with a specific request, and he copied Stefan Van Gelder, who's chair of GNSO, mm-hmm. in the hopes, I think, that Stefan would then pick up the ball and craft a letter from counsel to the GAC. I don't really know why it would go through counsel. It's my view that this really ought to come from the board. It's the board who seeks the advice. But nonetheless, I wrote back to Bruce and copied Stefan and asked, how can we be helpful?
Mm-hmm.
So the question for all of you is whether we want to make any specific follow-up, push back in any way on Bruce Tonkin's letter back to all of us. If anybody doesn't have it, I can walk through briefly what Bruce's suggestions were.
Mm. Would you mind doing that, Steve?
Yes. Bruce Tonkin wrote back and said he discussed this with Heather Dryden. She's, of course, chair of the GAC.
Yeah.
And Bruce suggested, number one, that we provide a note from the chair of GNSO to the chair of the GAC with a copy of the draft document, which would explain the context that the GNSO is responding to the board's request for advice. And, of course, the attached is the draft document pursuant to that charter from GNSO. And then explain where we are in the process. So we'd be explaining that we're digesting the comments that came in preparation of a final draft.
Yeah.
And that we'd be great to get GAC input on the final draft before the document's provided to the board. So that really suggests to the GAC that they've got a couple of weeks until they can see our final document. It might even be longer than a couple of weeks if we have to get it through counsel. And then ask the GAC to weigh in. So the point there is the GAC would weigh in after it's gone through counsel. I tend to wonder if that's the best method, because I'd rather the GAC weigh in before counsel sees it.
Yes. Rosemary here, I guess.
Two angles here. One is that Bruce is suggesting it come from GNSO chair.
Yeah.
And yet I still think that we've got to explain that this is the board whose resolution called for GAC advice.
Yes.
It's not a GNSO item. This was a board item pursuant to the affirmation. And maybe what we can do is bury all that in the counsel's request. So I'll stop there, Rosemary, and see what everyone's ideas are.
Yes. Are there any comments or thoughts on this? Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I totally agree with Steve. It's it has to be a board thing. It's not a PDP process that we're dealing with here. So
no.
I don't understand why Bruce might think it's that. The board has to ask for it.
Olivier, this is Steve. There is one rationale for having counsel be involved in the letter, and that's because they're going to attach the draft advice that we work up in the next 2 weeks. And that draft advice is pursuant to a GNSO's charter because the GNSO was responding to the board's request for advice. So I can see that it has both board and GNSO elements. I'm just concerned that the GAC would react much more strongly to something coming from the board than they would to something coming from Stefan.
Yes. Have you finished your comment, Olivier? Yes. Okay, Rosemary here.
Yeah,
perhaps if I just throw in a little more on my conversation with Peter Nettlefold, it might throw some light on GAC's response, well, their approach to responding. The second thing is I think we have to be very careful about engaging the board because of the history of GNSO with the Jazz Working Group and all that kerfuffle about the board that happened there. Peter, in my discussion with him, indicated that he thought this work would be of considerable interest to the GAC. They had not responded to the board's request, but would, and these, of course, were all informal comments. He was just speaking to me as a colleague from Australia rather than Australia's representative on the GAC or a member of the GAC. They're always very careful about that. But he said he thinks that, well, certainly himself, would find the work very helpful in a GAC consideration of the work as part of them advising, giving their own advice to the board. So the implication that I took from that was that they would always adopt a position of advising the board directly. They would, as I think we foreshadowed, find our work extremely helpful in preparing that advice. And the fact that we had provided through the GNSO Council that advice back to the board would be a trigger point at which time GAC would get interested in the work. Peter was indicating to me that it would be unlikely, to be quite direct with the people on this working group, that GAC would respond to GNSO Council in the way that might be foreshadowed by Stefan writing to GAC. So I think we do have a little complication there, which is not to say that if we assist Stefan by writing such a letter to inform the GAC about where the process is up to, possibly provide them with some material after it's been through GNSO Council, I would think. I don't think we'll get a response probably from Stefan or GNSO or GAC if we seek to get them to comment on a draft before it's considered by GNSO. So I think we should follow the process that Bruce has outlined because it's a process of continuing the engagement in the work. But I don't think we're going to get the GAC response in the time frame that we would have found helpful. The other thing Peter said to me is that GAC is very engaged at the moment in a process, and I've lost the plot a bit here, but a process of relating to some assessment in regard to new GTLDs. Someone may be more familiar than I am with the timing of that process.
Objections.
So they were very focused on that, and he felt that that would really be the centre of their universe for the next couple of months. So sorry that's been a bit complicated and long-winded, but I think we're best placed if we take account of the history of GNSO board interactions one way or the other and the reality of GAC, which is positive. They are interested in the work and see it as a valuable piece of work, but their time frame will be their time frame. Is my interpretation. So now I see Jonathan in the queue, Jonathan Robinson.
Hi, Rosemary. Thanks. I excuse my voice. I'm a bit husky from having some kind of problem over the last week or 10 days. I think that was pretty well put, Rosemary. I mean, I think I'm not sure it's exclusive in the sense that I think we can go along the path that Bruce suggests, and that doesn't, of course, it doesn't preclude the GAC giving advice directly to the board in the final event in any event. And I suspect that's where the GAC sees their position in the hierarchy. It seems to me pretty clear that the GAC wants the ultimate right of last advice. I mean, they might even feel more strongly about that, but I won't presume to say how they feel about it. But certainly, I don't think it does any harm to take them along the route that Bruce suggests. I think you're right, you're realistic in your assessment that given both where we are in the process and where they are in terms of the urgent matters that they might perceive to be most urgent, this might seem a little further down the tracks and therefore less worthy of urgent attention now. But nonetheless, I think to not engage with them in the way that Bruce suggests might leave us open to future criticism that we didn't take advantage of the opportunity to communicate with them. So in broad terms, I think what you said is sensible, and I think we should follow what Bruce is saying.
Thanks. Steve?
Thanks, Rosemary. Bruce's note is imprecise about which draft document to send, and that gives us the opportunity to decide which one we'd want to send. Bruce is speaking of the draft we circulated 2 months ago, and yet within 2 to 3 weeks we'll have another draft. It's still draft, because while it might be our working group's final report, it won't have been approved by GNSO, ALAC, or any other ACSO. So it might well be that we would prefer to finish our work over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So the document reflects the comments that have come in and the way in which we've refined our thinking since we published the first. And at that point, it would still be prior to any voting by council. So if GAC were to weigh in, their comments could be incorporated before council looks at it.
Yeah.
So that's the plan. And the other plan would be to give them what we have, resend what we sent 2 months ago, and see if that can provoke the GAC. But given their shortness of breath on timing, I don't think they're likely to reply.
Yes, no. Rosemary here. No, I don't think they are either. And I think, given that we've got, some government officials and other people deeply familiar with government processes, I think that we should give them the more completed piece of work. It would be foolish to have them running around in circles dealing with an issue that we suggest is dealt with in another way after we've taken on board the comments. So I certainly feel that any draft we send them should be the most complete draft that we've got after the next few weeks of work.
Rosemary, just let me agree with that once more and add one element of reinforcement.
Sure.
Yesterday, the U.S. government informed me that their comments should be approved by COB today. I had begged to be able to circulate them to all of you on this call, but they can't do that till they're signed. But the Commerce Department of U.S. government has extensive comments on the draft advice. I'm grateful for that because they'll be the first of any of the governments to reply. And also, they're at least for the time being, the U.S. government was the sole signatory on the other side of the affirmation of commitment.
Yep.
And given that, it's their language that they negotiated with ICANN on what's meant by consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition.
Yep.
And I'm doing two things. I'm highlighting for you that they're coming,
yes,
which means we may have the option of incorporating them on our very next call. And it probably also argues for waiting until we've incorporated Commerce Department comments before getting it to the GAC. Thank you.
Yes, Rosemary here. I think that we should take those comments, pardon me, as part of our public comment process. Any member of the community is encouraged, of course, to provide comments to us. So I think we should take those US government comments and incorporate them in this process that we're in at the moment. And then forward that draft with a carefully constructed letter. We'll have to do some good work on that to the GAC, because, of course, the GAC is such a different body than the individual governmental members of the GAC. So there may be significant difference between the US government position and the position that the GAC adopts after going through its internal discussion processes. So I feel we should take the US government comments, incorporate them in our updated draft, and it's that document that then gets processed through GNSO to the GAC as an entity for in a helpful manner for their consideration.
Cheryl here.
Yes, Cheryl.
Just to absolutely come in behind both what you and Steve have just said, but of course the fully incorporated with the Department of Commerce commentary next draft would be going to all of the ACs and SOs, not just the GAC.
Yes.
It would be at that time, it would be a perfect primer for GAC to then move to setting up a subcommittee, which we can. We can be fairly confident that both Suzanne and Paul would be, Peter, would be involved in at the very least, to look at that. And that's not bad timing for Prague, to be honest. I think that probably comes in nicely as a set of stop and go points for the GAC itself. Olivier, if I may, could I be so bold as to suggest to the chair of the ALAC that the ALAC conversation with the GAC may wish to have this matter on its agenda as two ACs during the Prague meeting. That might also act as a primer. Take it to the next steps that way. Thank you.
I believe it's Olivia here. I believe it already is, but I'll have to check. But I foresaw this coming up, so I think it will be.
Rosemary here, and that, of course, would be a nice inclusion in the letter from Stefan to invite the GAC to discuss the draft advice with GNSO during their meeting in Prague.
Is GNSO meeting with GAC in Prague? Because they don't meet with everybody each time.
No, but I think they will be, Cheryl, because I don't think they met last time.
Perfect. No, that's even better. Yeah, absolutely perfect. Great. Yep.
Very good advisors. Anyway, we can suggest that and see how they take that forward. Yeah. Okay.
So,
can
we just get Barry to check that it is a GNSO GAC meeting time?
Yes.
I'm assuming you're right, but it would be nice to be positive when we...
Yep. So if you don't mind checking that for us, Barry, that would be good. Now, in terms of writing a draft for Stefan's consideration, did you want to do that, Steve, or do you want me to have a go at it? I don't. While we're mulling over that, Olivier.
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier. Just prior to thinking about this, what I'll do. We usually set up our agendas about a month or just less than a month before the actual meeting. I'll send a copy over to this group of what the subjects will be that the ALAC will discuss with the GAC, so that they either are, depending on, you know, the consumer issue being in line, or actually training maybe a different angle if the GNSO Council is going to have a meeting with the GAC.
Right.
So we can cover more than one angle effectively.
Yes. Yes. Okay, that's good.
What, Cheryl here, Rosemary, it sounds like a pincer movement, doesn't it, dear?
Certainly not, Cheryl.
Sorry, guys, that's an in-joke between Rosemary and I.
No. Okay, now, so back to the question, Steve. Do you want to follow the Bruce letter up with a draft from Stefan?
If you want to take a first crack at it, I'm happy to weigh in.
Right. I just felt that it might be someone else's turn to be doing the coro, as they say, correspondence. So I'll have a go at the first draft of the letter, and then I'll send it round to everybody, and everybody feel absolutely free to weigh in. It just gives us something to work on. Right. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Barry, would you like to just give us a quick comment on 5?
Yes, Rosemary, this is Barry. I did connect up with the compliance team and briefed them on our discussion from our last session, which is in respect to two additional measures being added with both registry and registrar complaints and the ICANN complaint ticketing system. The compliance team is aware of this notion, but unfortunately there was a conflict and they couldn't attend today. But we are looking to try to schedule for our 21st or next Tuesday meeting, and they'll be on to answer questions and give a brief update. So that's all I have for now.
Okay. That's good, though.
Thank you. And number 6, the survey form is complete. Great.
Yes. And
so
if, Rosemary, if I may, I'd like to go ahead and get some of the informalities out of the way with respect to our remaining schedule, since we're kind of at the end of the open action items. If I, given the size of the comments that we have to review through, not to mention some late submissions, we recognized this last session, and we've tentatively scheduled a session for next Tuesday. I might recommend that we also maybe bump that up to 2 hours instead of 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
And having gone through this process a couple of times in the past and understanding the nature of this content, I might even recommend that we tentatively schedule a session for the 5th of June as well, and just to have it on deck.
Okay.
I totally agree with you, Barry. This is hugely important time for us, and to not put in the last extra efforts for the next stage would be silly. And I think the fact that this is almost unprecedented for a work group that I've at least been involved with over a few years, to have substantive comments in from a single government to consider as well, that's pretty important to get right. Because it's a pivotal opportunity. The only other thing is I'm wondering, are we going to do, even for each of us, like I assume Steve will be briefing the GNSO, and I know I've certainly been asked to brief the ALAC, are we doing a very short, 3 to 5 minute presentation set from this work group for Prague? Because that's work which we'd need to pop together in that same time frame as well.
Rosemary here, Cheryl. I think that's a good suggestion, because the work, I think everybody has started to understand the significance of this work now. So perhaps we should offer to just do, as you say, very short briefings in each of the ACSO meetings, because on other work of this magnitude, that's what happens. So I wonder if we could think about that. I'm not sure how we do that. Do we offer to provide the briefings so that people can consider when they're setting their own agendas? Perhaps Barry or someone on the call could just take us through the best way of making that suggestion.
If I may, with the additional time, Cheryl here for the transcript record, with the additional time allocation for this work group's activity that Barry has just proposed, and I'm certainly supporting, it would mean that we definitely would have the, 15 or 20 minutes on the agenda at the end of that last call, perhaps, where we could look at a quick 2 or 3 slide set and say, yes, this is what we... members of the work group will be using in some unified sense, because then we will have a set of key points, for example, out of our current draft advice, that sort of thing. So it'll be, building on what we told you last time, boys and girls. Now we've had public comments in. Here are 5 key things that came out of those public comments. here is the work group's reaction to that, and therefore blah, blah, blah. You know, that's certainly what I'd be aiming to do anyway.
I think that's a good suggestion, and that process of working through a slide set worked well, it seemed to me, given the transcript, et cetera, from Costa Rica. And the other thing it does, of course, is it clarifies everybody's thinking about the subject matter, so that even if there isn't a formal presentation or workshop or whatever, the corridor conversation is coming from the same page.
Yep.
Because of that joint work in preparing the slide deck. So I think we should take Cheryl's suggestion and list that as a piece of work to be done, say, in that 12th of June call.
And Rosemary, this is Barry. I'll take the action to create a first draft for the working group to consider towards the end of the month.
Oh, fantastic.
Barry. Great.
Barry, we're talking, you know, 5 to 7 minutes worth, so 3 or 4 slides is all tops.
And 4.
The team, this is Steve. I would just reiterate, when we present the slides, they would just be the latest thinking on our advice. I shouldn't think that we need to explain where we started and how the comments may have steered us, right? We just go straight to where we are, not how we got here.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's right. And the only thing that we might want to do, Steve, is make the previous slide deck available to people who just wanted to go back to that more in, it's deeper. It'll be more informative as a standalone piece than the new slide deck will be, I'm thinking.
As background material. Okay. Can I ask that what we do then, Barry, being totally biased, I must admit, because I like to have less, not more to do, if we can make sure that not only the slide deck but the transcript from the Costa Rica meeting is on a single wiki page with just a single link that we can, because I must admit I haven't looked. If it is, fantastic, but if not, can the magic happen? And then we just have a single link from our new slide deck in terms of, I'd probably put in the intro, that people can access. Certainly the at-large community now would be distributing presentations through a Dropbox. So the at-large community and the ALAC would probably also annex the actual presentation and the actual transcript. But just for the purposes of the fresh slide deck, I'd just be making a live hyperlink, but to a single wiki page where both is accessible.
That's great, Cheryl. Thank you.
And Rosemary, this is Barry. I just posted a classified URL in the chat window for you to see. So hopefully, actually, it'll be 9 days from now, the new GNSO website will launch, and there's a dedicated page to consumer trust or consumer metrics, and there will be the comprehensive start to finish of what we've gone through.
Oh, yay, team.
Great on a number of fronts. That's really terrific news. Barry, thanks. Now, I think we're ready to get into the substance of the work. I just wondered, Barry, whether you might give us a backgrounder on the tool, just a quick background on how you thought this tool might help us, and possibly the best way for us to actually use the tool. Would you mind doing that?
Absolutely. This is Barry. First of all, I can't take all the credit for the tool because it's been used in some prior working groups. The intent here is to, you know, obviously take a collection of all of our comments, and instead of reviewing them by the person or entity that submitted them, review them by the topic within the consumer discussion. And so the idea was to break it out by definition and then metrics for our three defined terms. And then at the bottom, there are general comments. What I found in a review from the Costa Rica session is my attempt at summarizing the comments that we received there didn't really translate well into the full context of the discussion, and so we found ourselves going back to the original transcript just to make sure that we covered the bases. So I avoided that here, and I literally cut and pasted each of the comments into their respective sections, which is basically column two. The who, where column, as you'll see for now, is the entity or person that submitted the comment, and then next to it is public comment, meaning that that came from the public comment session. Once I have the our review of the Costa Rica session comments loaded into this matrix, then you'll start to see a little bit of change there, and it'll be the entity or person and Costa Rica session, just so that we can delineate the difference. The other thing that you'll see in the next version with the Costa Rica session is that there will be working group response notes that we discussed over the last two previous sessions, as well as in the fourth column, which is a recommended action for the working group that we all agreed on taking, such as updating a definition or adding a metric or changing a metric, etc. And so the idea is once we've completed through this process, I'll go through the recommended actions column, and then those should translate directly into updates to the advice letter. The only other thing that I'll add to this is within the working group response column, there is already text there. And the idea was I wanted to try to fold all the comments into one document so that we wouldn't have to bounce around a bunch of different documents. And so what you'll see at the beginning is the document or the attachment that was included in the comment from where that comment came from. Or more particularly under the metrics section, if it was specifically with respect to an individual metric, I tried to correlate that with the page number and the metric number of the advice letter in there as well, so that we can correlate across them. And then my last comment, at the end of this matrix is a summary, or not a summary, but an attachment of all the comments that were received, except for those comments that were actual PDF or Word document attachments. They were too wieldy to try to fold into this document. So, but there is a link showing the connection. And so if I may, in terms of a process for traversing through this, we'll follow very similarly what we've done the last two sessions with the Costa Rica. But basically, I'll read through the comment that was supplied. The members can see who and where they came from, and then we can open up the dialogue about the specifics of that comment and how the working group chooses to respond to it.
Okay, thank you, Barry. Is there any comment on that suggested way forward through this part of our process? If not, I suggest, Barry, we dive in to number one and see how we go.
Great. Thank you. This is Barry. So I think this one is probably one of the more familiar comments to us. This is from the ALAC with respect to the term consumer that was made by the board using an expression from the affirmation of commitments. The ALAC emphasizes the problem that use of such a term for a community, especially in some of our regions. Within the comments, there was a small case study attached, and I didn't include that in here for the link for link purposes. But basically, in short, there is the use of consumer versus consument or Verbraucher in the German language, and the working group members can read through the case study itself, but in general, there's confusion about the use of consumer in certain foreign languages. Thus, the recommendation from the ALAC was, although the report of the working group clearly defines the term consumer as actual and potential Internet users and registrants, the ALAC believes that the correct term to use in all publications instead of consumer should be Internet user and consumers as Internet users, whether they are registrants or not. The recommendation of the ALAC is for the ICANN board to use the term Internet user in future work and communications referring to actual and potential Internet users. The ALAC leaves it to the board to determine how to respond to third parties that use the term consumer in light of the dissociation in the international context, an example of which is provided in this paper.
Okay, thanks, Barry. Are there any reactions to that?
Is Olivier in the queue? He's got a hand up.
Sorry, Olivier, now I've got the hand. Olivier?
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Just to add that as ALAC chair, I obviously have heard about this statement, and I'm ready to answer any questions which any of you might have on this. Thank you.
Steve?
Thanks. And thanks, Olivier. And we did discuss this several weeks ago. And when the way I read your advice here, it's advice to the board. And I'm trying to understand whether you're actually recommending that we change our documents to excise the use of the word consumer going forward. Is that part of this, or are you just directing the board to maybe sharpen its vocabulary?
May I reply?
Yes, sorry, Olivia. Yes, please.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you, Steve. I think that, you know, having been part of this working group, I perfectly know the amounts of discussion we've had on this. This is as a personal thing, I don't think that the working group itself can change its use of the word. It was given a mandate which used the term consumer, and I gather it will probably have to play within the guidelines and within the bounds that it was given in its mandate and in its charter. However, I do hope that we make it clear, and we as in the working group now, I hope that the working group will be able to make it clear that the use of the term consumer is ill-conceived in this context, and that it should have been using the word user, well, Internet user rather than consumer. If the working group itself doesn't say that, I'm not quite sure who else will say it apart from a direct statement from the ALAC over to the board dealing specifically with this. I also wanted to add that the forthcoming GAC-ALAC meeting in Prague will have this point on its agenda, and so we hope that the GAC will. We're proposing such a point to be put on the agenda. We hope the GAC will agree to it. That we'll discuss it with them, because it is something that's quite recurring, and that certainly appears to be not something that communities. And I'm not just talking about one person, but communities around the world seem to be against somehow.
May I do a quick follow-up before you go to Michael?
So.
Sorry, Olivia, you had just finished that.
Yeah, and I agree with him as well, you know, personally
okay.
as well. So, thank you.
Good. Now, Steve, you wanted to jump in. Was that?
I just wanted to follow up in response to Olivier, and then I see Michael's in the queue as well.
Yes.
I would recommend, under the recommended action, that we go to page four of our advice, where we describe what we meant by consumer, as it was not the nature of an entity but the role that they play. We have a full paragraph in there, which we devised when this issue first came up through Olivier and Cheryl. And I would recommend that we take a little bit of the paragraph that's in the definition block here, and add that to the note on page four as advice to the board in the future, is to try to be more precise than use the word consumer, whenever possible, to adopt a formal definition of consumer that includes Internet users.
Yes.
If we did that, there's a chance that the board would consider it, and then it avoids the need for us to change the whole rest of the document in a way that would then be inconsistent with the resolution and inconsistent with the affirmation of commitments. So I hope, Olivier, that kind of a recommended action gives full acknowledgement of the ALAC's concerns and makes sure that this group puts it in writing for the audience or the board.
Yes, Steve, it's Olivier here. And, you know, I think it goes even further than the board. It's actually something, it's an expression used by the Department of Commerce. That's how how it started. So going back in history, this is where the root of the problem lies, the misuse of the term to start with by the U.S. Department of Commerce. I guess that putting this in our document, making it go back to the board, and making it clear enough for the board to understand, it should hopefully go back to the U.S. Department of Commerce as well. It's just something that has infuriated a lot of people, and just proceeding and continuing in this direction is not constructive. Thank you.
Okay. I have a couple of comments on that, but let's go to Michael, who's in the queue.
Well, yes, I just had a quick comment, and it's coming from the point of view, the benefit of ignorance, not having been involved in the earlier conversations, that in reviewing the ALAC comment, my understanding, at least as far as our document, is that consumers in the context of the CTC is a defined term rather than a commonly used term. So I think that solution that Steve was discussing in terms of the general use of consumer being brought to the attention by moving that comment and emphasizing it a bit certainly makes sense to me.
Hear you from me, Cheryl, for the record.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I wanted to, Rosemary here, make two comments. The first is a general process comment, and it comes from having just completed a large piece of work for our government looking at telecommunications issues in regional areas. When we got to the point of writing that report with its recommendations about what government should do, we found ourselves at a number of points where we didn't really want to make recommendations, but we wanted to tell people things. So we came up with this construct called findings. So we would make recommendations that say government should do this, that and the other. But then we had this way of telling them things, which in that particular context we called them findings. And that was a signal that it was an important issue. Sometimes it was out of our scope. Sometimes it wasn't clear what the recommendation should be. But nonetheless, it was such an important issue that consideration should be given to it. And it strikes me that this very first issue in our context is that kind of an issue where I don't feel that we can go out of scope of the work that we've been chartered to do and the board resolution that we've been given. But the difficulties that we ourselves had in our discussions and the difficulty that other people find themselves in other places, I think means that this is something that we should reflect back to the board as something that they do really need to consider. So I'm not sure in ICANN land whether there's such a construct as a finding, which has got, you know, maybe one red flag, and I'm meaning virtually here, but something that says this is very important and ought to be considered. But that's a possible way forward for us with this work. Second thing I want to say is on the topic of consumer policy. And my own experience in that world suggests to me that when governments use the word consumer, they do so, and bearing in mind this is coming from affirmation of commitment stuff, they do so with good intentions, because what that word does is trigger a body of policy work that has significant historical context and importance. So in Australia, for example, our government has just done a considerable amount of work over 4 years developing something that's called the National Consumer Code. And the word consumer is a very important signal to everybody that what's going to be taken into account is a public interest agenda, whatever the particular matter is, there's going to be a particular way of processing the issues and making the decisions. So I just put that on the table because I think governments will find it difficult to completely let go of the concept of consumer because of that history and context. And it may be, for example, a simple matter in terms of government members on the GAC explaining why they're going to the ICANN meetings. I could imagine people saying, well, we're doing so because it's in the interests of our consumers. We have to be at that table. So that's just a little bit of background as a reflection on that discussion about where ICANN might wind up on the word consumer. There will, I think, be other histories that people bring to that discussion. So putting that to one side, that second point, I wonder what do people think about this notion of us having findings or whatever word we like as well as recommendations? You could, or what we did in my committee was we actually listed them out. So they weren't to be kind of found in notes about things. There was actually a list of recommendations and a list of findings, and that gave those issues quite a deal of prominence in the report that I'm talking about. So is there any reaction to that suggested approach? If not, then perhaps we just keep that as an idea and do what Steve is suggesting, which is to augment note 4 at this point.
Rosemary Cheryl here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we can't have our cake and eat it too on this one. I think the note 4 way is a solid and a very much endorsed by me approach. But I also don't see a reason why, and constructs have come into the way ICANN work groups and ICANN whole foundational structures have operated because of things just like this, meeting the need of a particular way to answer a challenge. There is no reason why we can't, providing we have more than one, and it's not finding, but findings, annex such a document, and that might get that tool up for consideration anyway. So if we've got more than one finding, then yeah, I'd be all for that. We would, of course, like everything else, have to give a little prehistory and a little bit of context and I guess more than just, you know, define it in a glossary, but a little bit of a definition of what this is, that this is a deemed out of scope but yet significant issue identified by the work group during its process that was worthy of blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, if we have more than just the one, I think that could be a very interesting thing to explore, at least from my totally biased point of view. Thank you.
All right, Rosemary here. Well, perhaps if we just kind of hold that thought, which might be another new construct for an ICANN process, until we get through this review of all the issues, and then we can see where we are and whether that approach is useful or not useful. So that then takes us really back to the first issue, and have we captured the approach, which I think is to leave our document the way it is, but reflecting this issue in note 4.
Page 4, where the note is on consumer definition. We already have a note in there, a paragraph, and I was proposing putting it below there.
Yes. So the clearest way to find out whether we're in agreement on this, apart from people not jumping up in the queue, is to ask Barry, Do you know what we want you to do now, Barry, with this issue?
Yes, I've taken some notes of the working group response, and then I've also added the recommended action, which is add the ALAC advice recommendation to notes on page 4, definition of consumer, to possibly include internet user. And then a secondary recommendation is I listed as possible to create a findings and recommendations annex to the advice letter.
Okay, so everyone happy with that? So then we can move to the second item. So would you mind reading that, Barry?
Yes, this is Barry. This is the consumer trust definition section. The first comment is from INTA. Definition of consumer trust. We believe the definition of this term is fundamentally sufficient. However, in order to clarify its meaning, we suggest changing the word "it" to its proposed purpose, which could refer to confidence or name resolution or TLD registry operator to the registries, so that it's clear that the purpose being reviewed is the one set forth by the registry as part of its application and operating agreement with ICANN. And I think the next comment is actually tied with it as well. And this is also from INTA. Consumer trust is defined as the confidence registrants and users have in the consistency of name resolution and the degree of confidence among registrants and users that a TLD registry operator is fulfilling, their words, the registry's proposed purpose and is complying with ICANN policies and applicable national laws. And what I should clarify here is the, and this is where the, in the working group response column, that it plays an importance as to where this came from. Comment number 2 is from the text-based comments that were provided by INTA, but they also provided a cut and paste of all of our metrics and some of their proposed changes. So just to reiterate, number 2 is the comments themselves. Number 3 was pulled from their chart, and this is a cut and paste of our consumer trust definition with their revision to replace IF and to the registry's proposed purpose.
Thanks, Barry. While you were doing that, I lost my phone connection, and I've just rejoined. So I'm afraid I missed that description and comment, but I can see hands in the queue. So could we start with Michael?
Yes. I guess to clarify it, Barry, you're correct. The 2 numbered points, 2 is actually from the text where we're presenting what it is that we believe should be changed and why, which is just to clarify the reference in that. And then 3 is actually the definition from the draft advisory in which we have made the proposed change, which was simply changing its to the registries.
Thanks, Michael. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Just a question on this. It seems that the INTA just wishes to make things more more understandable, remove any ambiguities. Is there any legal basis to replacing it to specifically note the registry's proposed purpose? Does this entice a contractual agreement at that point? Thank you. Being no lawyer, I have no clue, so this is why I asked the question. If anyone else knows, thank you.
This is Steve. No lawyer either, Olivier, but the proposed purpose shows up in the questions and answers of an application, and it may or may not make its way to the registry contract. Only really in the case of a community TLD are some of these registrant restrictions baked into the actual agreement. But all applicants declare their mission and purpose in their application, and we're referring to the broader definition here. And just to clarify, I would support this clarification by using the word registries instead of its.
Mm-hmm.
This is Michael, and in response to Olivier's question, to my knowledge, it would have no legal effect changing that. It is merely a clarification based on our understanding of what it's referring to, which is the registry's proposed purpose.
All right, I'm sensing consensus on that issue. So once again, Barry, are you clear on what we're asking you to do?
Yes, I've taken the note down for both 2 and 3.
Okay. Okie doke. So we move then to Michael, had you finished your comments?
Yes, I have on that.
Thank you. So we move now to number 4.
Okay, so the next section is consumer trust metrics, and we'll start off with number 4. This is also from ENTA, and this is from their metrics chart. And what you see in the first half is a cut and paste of their suggested change, and then the statement below it is their rationale. The metric itself is from the advice letter on page 7, the fourth metric, survey of perceived consumer trust in DNS relative to experiences before the GTLD expansion. Survey could measure experiences with phishing, parking sites, malware and spam, confusion about the new GTLDs, user experience in reaching meaningful second-level TLDs, registrant experience in being in a different GTLD, trademark owner's experience with regard to cyber squatting, prevalence, costs and satisfaction with results when a resolution is sought. The stated survey criteria are far too narrow. Also see below for other measures that could be the subject of the survey.
Thanks, Barry. Any comment on this one?
This is Steve, if I might.
Yes, Steve.
The survey target audience was supposed to be internet users. You see that, Olivier? I didn't say consumers.
Very good.
And if you did, that would certainly include registrants who also own trademarks, but it would not be a survey that would actively seek out trademark owners in order to assess trademark owner experience with regard to cyber squatting and prevalence, which is part of the requested change.
Yeah.
Let's keep that in mind. A survey almost always has a target audience. The survey vendor will probably have metrics that are associated with a representative sample size. They might even have a random sampling technique if they do a survey that way. It could also be a survey that's posted on the internet, and anyone who wishes can self-reply. Those have different validities when it comes to statistical significance, though.
Yes.
In any event, I think that the trademark owner angle could be troubling on this one, and it would be better if it just said registrant's experience with regard to cyber squatting, which could be a registrant who had to go protect their trademark in multiple places, or a registrant who was the victim of a URS or UDRP in a case when they felt it was unjustified. So I would suggest that I'd be in support of these expansions, but not with respect to targeting the survey to a trademark owner. I would change that word to registrant, and I'd be good with it. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm pretty much minded to agree with Steve here. I think I've found it troublesome that this extending this out into the whole trademark owner experience is problematic when we're in terms of us trying to measure perceived consumer trust. I guess the challenge is, if the registrant happens to be a trademark owner, but Steve's point is that we cover that by the broader definition of registrant experience with regard to cyber squatting. But certainly it seems ambitious to cover multiple audiences and multiple phenomena in this. And I think we should try and respect what Inter is trying to achieve here, but remain focused in what we're measuring.
Cheryl here. Not in the room. I don't know whether I'm jumping the queue, so can you put me in the queue, Rosemary?
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, thank you. Just I'd like to capture those last couple of words that you were just saying, because I think what we can say in response to this is we're respectful of what you're trying to achieve, but we also need to recognise that the review team that will be formed to actually work with the data sets that come out of such a survey could very well be quite instrumental in the creation of the survey instructions. And I would assume that there would be a degree of professionalism at both the client and the provider end of such a survey, and questions like identifying such criteria as are you a current trademark holder, blah, 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 would be, you know, in a decent survey, depending on, you know, what you get is also what, you know, what you pay for is also what you get. So, yeah, I think just recognising it and punting it back into the definition will be fine from my point of view anyway. And obviously, you know, like any, and I don't want to use it as a derogatory term because I think lobby groups are particularly important to focus and give us, in many cases, huge clarity on matters. Yeah, they're doing their job, but they're one of many. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Michael?
Yes, I'm looking at that in regard to the entire consumer trust, and although I think the intent of that coming in was to include trademark owners as a consumer, I can see that to a certain extent the concerns that would be covered there are covered in the metrics that come later on the relative experience and cost and incidence of litigation, UDRP, procedures and that which INTA was suggesting. So perhaps the inclusion of trademark owner here actually confuses the issue. I can see that, and changing that over to read registrant would make sense, although I'm not certain what registrants would have to say in regards to cyber squatting experience generally, and certainly Internet users, I think, are generally unconscious of the existence of cyber squatting unless it directly affects them. So that might just be something that last clause might be something that shouldn't be in there. However, the other portions that we that INTA had suggested added was simply to include a few other types of experiences that Internet users might experience, again, as was just said, as a suggestion to whoever puts together a final survey that they should consider including. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a comment on the word parking in the first part of this recommendation, but I wanted to let's finish the discussion on the last clause, a trademark owner or registrant's experience with cyber squatting, because what Michael just floated might argue for changing it to registrant, as I had suggested, but it might also be that Michael's suggesting drop it from here and cover this issue under the choice survey. Michael, could you clarify on that?
Well, I was not thinking so much as, I guess that could be in the choice survey. I was looking more towards the actual metric measurements that come later, because this, obviously, surveys are a much more subjective type of measure of what's occurring. One thing that we were concerned with was that, you know, a test be made of intellectual property owners, be they copyright owners, trademark owners, whatever, of their experience of the expanded Internet, as well as the user, as well as the registrants.
Michael, if I could follow up on that, the choice survey later on probably doesn't scratch that itch, but there are metrics here under consumer trust that measure the percentage of complaints for URS and UDRP, as well as the relative resolution of those incidents in the new TLDs versus the legacy. So there are some quantitative measures of what you speak, but we don't have any place in here where we're surveying trademark owners explicitly to ask them about cost and satisfaction with results.
Right. I guess I'm saying I would think that to the extent that those quantitative measures address the concern that was set forth, and this, frankly, was not a section that I worked on with INTA committee. But to the extent that it addresses these points in the quantitative area, I think this last clause might be removed, simply because I don't think asking, again, Internet users their experience with cyber squatting is something to suggest to a survey maker going forward.
This is Jonathan Zook. Could I get in the queue?
Jump in now, Jonathan, and then I'll come back to you, Jonathan Robinson. Yep.
Sure. I mean, it seems a little bit outside the scope of this particular resolution to be surveying satisfaction of trademark owners. I mean, I think that it's a – I think, you know, some of these things are going to be ethereal measures, a subjective measure with whether or not what consumers' perception was associated with the choices they had and the increased competition, et cetera. And so some satisfaction survey that allows us to have some kind of delta, I think is worth having as a data point for the review team when they're ultimately looking into this, as opposed to it being some grand objective measure that comes up with everything. But definitely self-selected polls usually have bad samples. It's going to be people that are either biased toward a particular point of view, they're either activated by a particular group of people, or they are tend toward people that have a complaint and use the poll as a complaint system. So, I mean, a legitimate poll has to have, a random sample to go out and get any kind of idea as to whether or not there's some delta in consumer satisfaction.
Jonathan Robinson, did you want to make a contribution here or no longer?
Rosemary, this is Barry. He had to drop.
Ah, okay. Thank you, Barry.
Rosemary, to make a couple of comments on this, I think what we're canvassing is a number of issues around the survey. If we just stop at the first sentence, survey of perceived consumer trust in the DNS relative to experiences before the GTLD expansion, full stop, and then what we're doing in the second sentence is making some suggestions, which of course attract feedback from those people who aren't covered in our suggestions. So we have an expanded set of suggestions about what should be included in the survey. But the first point is that we want a survey of perceived consumer trust to be taken so that we get those delta points, as Jonathan Zook was just saying. The second point, I think, is that we have the first example of where when we go from a definition of consumer, which, as Jonathan Zook was, I think, just demonstrating, it's a language that comes with history attached to it. And when we interpret that as internet user or registrant, then we've got an issue to consider, because you then do have segmented sorts of consumers. And perhaps, again, that is a matter that we should capture in terms of the construct of the survey, that this particular survey is going to have to make sure that it covers the broad range of consumer interests as we define them, internet user and registrant, and a broad range of experiences pre and post the GTLD expansion. I guess as far as I've got at the moment is that those are the two issues that have come out of the discussion for me. I'm not sure what our response is at the moment, and we've got a number of people in the queue. So perhaps if we hold those thoughts of mine and go back to the queue, I think, Steve, you were first in the queue.
Thanks, Rosemary. It's a quick one. It's on the word parking. I've testified in Congress about parking. I think it's a real problem. It's like billboards on the highway. It intercepts otherwise sensible searches and sends me to a place that provides no information whatsoever and is maybe even a little misleading. So my qualifications, Michael, are good here. I can't stand parked pages. However, they're completely legal, and there's no firm definition of a page that's a legitimate directory of Belgian restaurants versus a parked page that worked for BelgianRestaurants.com. There's no real distinction, and I don't know how to run with the word parking in here invites an attack from critics, and we won't be able to defend our attack because we don't have a definition. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Michael?
I guess going back to that, Steve, I would agree. I mean, to my knowledge, they're not illegal, and yet they are obnoxious when you're using. I think the discussion, and especially the summary that you just made a moment ago, Rosemary, was bringing to attention that what is being focused on here is the fact that we are suggesting that there be a survey of perceived consumer trust, then looking at, one, what sort of factors would go into determining whether or not a internet user or a registrant would have what their experience would be in terms of trust in the domain name system. And they would, of course, have different sort of concerns that would increase or decrease their trust. At the same time, and this is going back again, I did not write this comment on behalf of INTA, so I'm understanding it now, that what was being addressed there was that in making the suggestion that there be a survey of perceived consumer trust, that the two things that we can do in terms of the advice seems to be, one, some suggestions as to categories of survey subjects, and that would include an individual using the internet, a domain name registrant, a trademark owner, a child, various categories. You can see where that's going. And then also in setting forth some types of issues or experiences that might be tested in that survey. Certainly either of those lists would be beyond the scope of this one item. So I wonder if there would be a way of saying such a survey should examine components of the internet experience, for example, with a short list. Such a survey should also take into account the various types of users of the internet and of the domain name system, including internet users, domain name registrants, intellectual property owners, etc. And then emphasized as a final that the final determination of categories of subjects and also of types of experiences would be left to that survey team in the end. I think that's what we were getting at here.
Yes, right. Okay, thank you, Michael. Olivier?
Thanks, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Actually, it's interesting. Well, discussing this specific point, it strikes me that we have consumers are just not one embodying thing. In fact, I think the lowest common multiple of everything is the internet user, and then that becomes a consumer if they purchase something on the website or depending on how they make use of the internet, they become one category of internet user or another category of internet user. I understand why. Of course, having been in this working group, I understand why we focused on specific questions, since we wanted to provide a certain level of what was acceptable or what was unacceptable, or what was expected or what was unexpected. But at the same time, I also somehow wonder if we are also focusing a lot on just specifics and whether we should actually keep the window a little bit more open to maybe other other things being in the
being drafted by whatever team will be drafting the survey itself. So I could go either way on this one, really. But, you know, I understand why we wanted something to be concrete and basically, you know, start with that. Perhaps maybe we should say start with this, but consider other things as well as time goes. Today, we can't know what the unknown unknowns are going to be when the new GTLDs are going to be released. Some of these we might not even forecast. Some of them we have forecast, but some of these we don't even know. And perhaps closing the door is not such a great idea. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivier. Just a quick response from me. Pardon me. We need to remember, of course, the point that Jonathan Zook raised, that we want to survey before and after. So we need a structure that enables us to reflect on the current set of issues, but as Olivier has said, does not close the door to new issues which may emerge. Back to Michael.
Oh, I was simply wondering if such a survey had not been performed at this point by one of the various service providers, and I was just going to point out that I think it is important that something be derived or suggested so that it can be explored before the change, before the new GTLDs, as well as after.
Steve,
is that Cheryl?
No, no, I thought I heard Steve.
Go ahead, Cheryl, you're first.
Oh, okay. If it was from one of the service providers, I don't think it's as useful as if it's done by ICANN before go live. I think that's essential, but ICANN has its own data, because I can assure you that there'd be parts of the end-user community that would doubt anything, including a statement that the sky was blue, that came out of some service providers. So I think we need to be fairly cautious that what we're using as our baseline stuff, that's not my personal opinion, I'll hasten to add, it is going to be, you know, valued and valuable. It strikes me, Rosemary, that we might have an immediate function for the findings annex, and that is that we're collecting from these comments even so far an awful lot of really concrete, really good and really useful suggestions for future surveys. And maybe we could go sort of shallow and then also suggest here are some of the specifics and go deep questions that our comments elicited, and that we just capture them as resource material for the survey team. I'd hate to see it get lost. I'd hate to see it not get recognised. But I don't want it to cloud up our core reason for being either. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Steve?
Thanks. When we wrote this item on a survey, we did not write it as if the survey had to be done twice. Instead, the way we wrote this idea was a survey of perceived trust relative to their experiences before the expansion. We wrote it as a single-time survey, and it would be sometime a year after, 2 years after the launch, and people would be asked for their perception of the increase or decrease in malware, confusion, spam. And it is a retrospective assessment of how they felt about it. It was not a relative to necessarily, nor was it a change over time. And we may have evolved in our thinking to where we now want to run this twice, but that isn't what's written in our draft document.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Rosemary here, this is a comment. I've certainly evolved in my thinking because I think there are a number of other areas later where we do, pardon me, want to do the before and after. So I guess that's another topic we need to discuss. But given the time on this call, I wonder if we could park that question of a before and after survey on this particular issue of consumer trust and see if we can wrap up the comments that we're discussing this morning, and let me have a go at it. I think what we're saying is that we want to leave in our draft advice the fact that there should be a survey of perceived consumer trust in the DNS relative to experiences for the GTLD expansion, and then we want to make some comments in a, let's call it for the moment, findings area that indicate that the people who work on that survey need to consider the groups that are going to be surveyed under the umbrella term of consumer, meaning internet user and registrant, and they need to consider the different sorts of issues that will be affecting perceived trust by those different groups. So if we take the detail and put it in our findings area. Am I on the right track with that? Pick from Michael, thank you.
Rosemary, it's Steve.
Yes?
I feel like disconnecting the specific ideas and disconnecting them from the table and moving them into findings is doing a disservice to the people we're going to ask to review the document. Earlier on, I thought it made some sense to think about the consumer, the redefining what consumer means. I think that made sense for a finding because it isn't really part of these tables. But we're going to stick with these tables, and we have something to say about the fourth row of the table with regard to the elements of the survey or something about how the survey should be conducted. Should it be a random sample or a convenience poll? Or if we want to indicate that it ought to be done twice or just once, all that should be in this same row rather than in a different part of the document called findings.
Except that, of course, the final deliberation on the survey will be made by a group other than ourselves.
But Rosemary, the final determination of everything in our document will be made by a review team, right, that gets appointed a couple of years out.
Yes.
We're doing our best to sort of tee this up now, and if the board approves it at least, staff can begin to measure some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. We don't have the final say in anything, but if we do want to make suggestions, you think they all ought to live in the same part of the document so that whoever reviews our idea for survey can see in here that we're asking for a survey of perceived trust. We would suggest or recommend the following elements. We suggest it be a random sample poll instead of a convenience poll, and we further recommend that it be done at the midpoint 1 year after new TLDs are out with an opportunity to do a retrospective assessment. And I'm just rambling here with an idea of saying all the things that would be in that box, some of them don't smell like findings to me. They smell like recommendations.
Yes.
Okay, well, I think that means that we're going to have to keep this issue open until our next call, because if that's the way we want to go, then we've got to really work out what's going to be in those issues that are recommended by us, even though that's not the final construct of the survey, because someone else will need to work on that. I guess I'm looking for a group view on whether we just hold this item over and come back to it at the next call, or whether there's some way to get consensus very quickly at this stage of today's call.
Well, Rosemary, I'm inclined to... This is Jonathan Zook.
Yes.
I guess I'm inclined to agree a little bit with Olivier that we don't need a whole lot of specificity in the description of the poll, except maybe just talking about some of the questions that might be asked. Because the whole idea of what the sample is or what the methodology of the poll is something I think best left to econometric professionals, and we shouldn't be playing make-believe on that score, but instead just get to the idea of the types of questions that would be good to have the answers to, and perhaps answer the question about whether to do one or two polls. But I don't think we should be trying to drill too deeply into the methodology of the poll or the sample, et cetera, because that's something that there are people, experts to do.
Okay. So for me, I would
again, and this is just my personal view, I would stick with the recommendation that there is a survey of perceived consumer trust, and then I would put a set of issues somewhere else which say we've got to think about whether we're having one or two polls, we've got to think about who are the surveyed groups, and then we've got to think about the survey issues, and here's a beginning list of those issues.
Rosemary, this is Steve. Did you mean to drop the words relative to experiences before the GTLD expansion from that first sentence?
No. I was going to have the whole first sentence because, to me, relative leaves open the question of whether you do a survey now and a survey later or you just do the survey later.
Great. Just wanted to make sure we kept that in there.
Yeah, so that's all in there. But everything from the survey could goes somewhere else. Not that it loses prominence, and I suppose I'm still thinking about my findings thing. It's very important work and must be considered by someone dealing with our advice, but it's not the be-all and end-all of this particular survey. Michael, you're in the queue?
Yes, just following up on what Jonathan had said, I think I would agree. I think perhaps, and this would also address the issue that Steve raised of keeping everything within the chart, that rather than point out particular types of issues or activities and rather than pointing out particular subject groups, that if one or two statements could be made simply emphasizing that the survey should be inclusive of issues that affect the trust in the DNS of the various groups of Internet users, including but not limited to Internet users, registrants, intellectual property owners, academic users, et cetera, and leave it as open-ended as possible. That way we could include an advisory to whoever is actually putting together the survey questions, which I agree with Jonathan, that's not something that I can do well or frankly care to. But it gives them the direction that we believe that they should be inclusive and, again, backs up what it is that we're suggesting that they try to determine. And also, on a second point, I agree with Steve, I think, in looking over this again and evolving my understanding that this could be something. It is what is your experience been? Has it been positive or not? So that it is either single or certainly a year or 3 year type of survey rather than one that would have to be performed before the new GTLDs are out. Thank you.
Olivier, and I'm aware that we're right on time now for this call. Olivier?
Thanks, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I think to move forward on this one, I would suggest we would just add the words instead of survey could measure experiences, blah, 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 we could say survey could at least measure experiences, blah, 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 and and then leave the door open for more. Basically, this would then be just seen as the minimum things that it should really be looking at and leaving the door open for more things and letting the people who will design the survey think of further things that would be asked about. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivia. I think that's actually a very useful suggestion. Barry, are you clear enough on where we're at with this issue to make those changes, number one? And Michael, would you mind thinking further about the location of that last specific point about the trademark owner's experience, whether it ought to stay here in this list of at least issues, or whether it's better located somewhere else in our document?
Okay, I will do so.
Thank you. So is everybody happy with that as the resolution of this issue for the moment? we might just have a quick look at it when we come back on our next call.
Cheryl here. I think it is something we need to revisit on the next call, because my mind's spinning a little bit right now. I'm thinking, and I suspect Olivia will need to ask and try and do a bit of prediction on what the reaction of the at-large community will be about singling out trademark owners at that point, in very specifically, in what they would perceive as an end user, more generic survey. There are some sensitivities, of course, that we need to look at on both sides of the equation there. And I think I heard language earlier in today's call that might be better at making sure we are appropriately inclusive of all under registrants, and less likely to pick at raw nerves for a few verbally dexterous but nevertheless vociferouses in the ICANN community. So can we come back to that one? And Olivia, can you do a straw poll in at least ALAC, if not your wider community?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll make a note of it, and I'll send an email out over to the ALAC to ask them. This is Olivier, by the way. Thank you.
Thanks. And Steve's just made a point in the chat about not using the word trademark in this survey recommendation, and that goes to the question of whether that last point actually belongs somewhere else in this document. All right, I think we've run hard up against the timeline here, but we've done some very important work today. We've got our process sorted out, and we've cracked a few of these issues. So I think it's been a great call, and we are scheduled to meet again at the same time next week, but for 2 hours. Which I think will be a very useful extension. Any final comments from anybody?
Rosemary, it's Steve. Just to clarify, if the U.S. government gets their comments in today or tomorrow, do we understand that we would like staff to help analyze those as well? And we would consider them to be relevant even if they came in a couple of days late.
Yes.
Yes, definitely. Thanks. All right, well, we'll finish the call now and regroup after rest, hopefully, next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Rosemary.
Bye.
Thank you, Laurie. You are now stopped the recording. Thanks.
Thanks very much, everyone.